A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
A size 10 Nike Air Force 1 and a size 10 Clark's Desert Boot are both labeled 10, but the Nike is nearly a quarter inch shorter. Not because of some manufacturing error, because the wooden mold, the last, that each brand builds the shoe around is a different shape entirely. The number on the box is a suggestion. Daniel's got the foot to prove it. He's a larger, wider foot, thinks he's a 12 wide, but can never quite remember when he's standing in the store, which is already half the problem right there. He wants to know why Europe, the US, and Australia all have completely different sizing patterns, how much manufacturers vary within those systems, and what you actually measure at home if you want footwear that's durable and actually comfortable. So, let's start with the systems themselves, because they don't even agree on what a size is.
The core problem is that shoe sizing isn't a standard. It's a reference point that each brand interprets through its own last, and the last is the wooden or plastic form the shoe is stretched and built around. Same size number, different last geometry, different shoe. That's the whole story in one sentence. There are three major systems in play. The US system, and this is men's and women's separate, is based on barleycorns. One barleycorn is a third of an inch. U.S. men's starts at size 1 equals 7 and 2/3 inches, then adds a third of an inch per size. Half sizes are 1/6 of an inch, which is barely perceptible to most feet. The U.K. system is almost identical but shifted by one size. A U.K. 10 is a U.S. 11, roughly.
And the European system?
Paris points. One Paris point is 2/3 of a centimeter. No gender split, a 42 is a 42. But here's the thing most people get wrong, EU sizes represent last length, not foot length, the mold the shoe is built on. A size 42 last might be 28 centimeters, but your foot might be 27. That extra centimeter is what the industry calls ease, wiggle room, space for your foot to expand during the day.
So you're buying a measurement of the factory mold, not a measurement of your foot.
And Australia uses UK sizing, but with its own labeling quirks. So Daniel's dealing with three different numeric languages that don't translate cleanly.
The Brannock device. This thing was invented in 1925, and it's still the gold standard sitting in every shoe store. That metal thing with the sliders that nobody actually uses properly.
It measures three things. Heel to toe length, which is what everybody gets measured. Heel to ball. That's the arch length, the distance from the back of the heel to the ball of the foot where the foot flexes. And width of the ball, most people walk out of a shoe store knowing one of those three numbers.
Which is how Daniel ends up staring at a wall of boxes, not remembering if he's a 12 wide or a 13 or something else entirely. The store measured the wrong thing.
And here's the part that makes me a little crazy. The Brannock device instructions are clear. Width is measured at the ball of the foot, not the arch, not the heel. The ball is the widest point, where the metatarsal heads are. If you measure at the arch, you get a completely different number, and you'll buy a shoe that's too narrow where it actually matters.
But the systems are just the beginning. The real chaos starts when manufacturers interpret those systems through their own lasts.
Every brand owns its own last library. These are proprietary. They're trade secrets, effectively. Nike's standard last tends to be narrow through the heel and midfoot, wider at the toe box. It's built for a specific foot profile. New Balance uses multiple lasts. They've got the SL1 for standard fit, SL2 for wider feet. A Nike 12 wide and a New Balance 12 wide are completely different objects. Different volumes, different pressure points, different heel cups.
So the number on the box is the least reliable data point in the entire transaction.
It's almost useless across brands. Within a single brand, it's somewhat consistent. Nike to Nike, you know what you're getting. But walk from a Nike store to a Clark store, and the 12 means nothing.
I want to sit with the barleycorn thing for a second. A barleycorn. An actual grain of barley.
An actual unit of measurement dating back to medieval England. Edward II, early 1300s, declared that three barleycorns laid end to end made an inch. The shoe sizing system inherited that. A child's size 0 was 4 inches, the length of a newborn's foot, and then it stepped up by barleycorns from there.
So Daniel's size 12 foot is being measured in grains of barley decreed by a king 800 years ago.
And the half size adds 1/6 of an inch. Think about that. 1/6 of an inch is 4.2 millimeters. That's the thickness of 2 stacked nickels. That's the increment we're supposed to feel.
Which is why the half size up for width trick is a trap.
It's a complete trap. Going up a half size adds length, not width. 1/6 of an inch longer. For someone with wide feet, you now have a shoe that's still too narrow but also too long. Clown shoes. Your foot slides forward, your heel slips, the flex point of the shoe hits in the wrong place, and you destroy the upper because your foot is pressing sideways against material that wasn't designed for that stress vector.
Stress vector. Listen to you.
I'm not wrong. Wide feet and narrow shoes cause the upper to stretch unevenly. The stitching along the sides, especially where the upper meets the sole, takes constant lateral pressure. That's not what the shoe was built for. A properly fitted wide shoe lasts longer because the materials aren't under constant tension. You're looking at a 30 to 40% difference in lifespan.
So the wrong width is expensive twice. You're uncomfortable and you're replacing shoes faster.
And if you're Daniel, with a wider foot, you're probably buying shoes that are too narrow and compensating by going up in length, and you're paying for it every 18 months instead of every 2.5 years.
Let's talk about the width designations themselves, because they're not standardized either.
Some brands use D as standard, 2E as wide, 4E as extra wide. Others just stamp a W on the box and call it a day without specifying the actual width increment. D is supposed to be a men's standard. That's roughly 3.5 to 4 inches across the ball. 2E adds about 1/4 inch. 4E adds another 1/4. But those increments aren't enforced by anyone. There's no federal width inspector.
The Department of Footwear Standards
doesn't exist. New Balance is one of the few brands that publishes actual foot circumference ranges for each width. You can look up their chart and see that a size 12 2E fits a foot circumference of roughly 10 and 3/8 inches around the ball. Nike doesn't publish that. Most brands don't.
So, what do you actually measure at home? Daniel's standing in his living room with a tape measure and a piece of paper.
You need 3 numbers, and you need to write them down. Not the size, the measurements. Because the measurements travel across brands. The size doesn't. First, heel to toe length. Stand on a piece of paper, mark the back of the heel and the tip of the longest toe. Measure that in centimeters or inches. Centimeters are actually easier because most brand size charts use them. Do both feet. Your feet are different sizes and you fit to the larger one.
Second,
heel to ball. This is the one nobody does. The Brannick device has a metal slider for this. You slide it to the ball of the foot, that bony prominence at the base of the big toe. At home, you can feel for it. Mark that point on the paper, measure from the heel. This number tells you where the shoe needs to flex. If your arch length is long relative to your total foot length, you need a different last shape, something with a longer vamp, more volume through the midfoot.
And third,
ball width. Measure around the widest part of your foot with a flexible tape. That's the circumference at the ball. Do it standing, full weight on the foot. Your foot spreads when you stand. A sitting measurement is useless.
3 numbers. Heel to toe, heel to ball, ball circumference. And then what? You take those to a brand size chart?
You take them to a brand specific size chart. Not the generic conversion chart that says US 12 equals EU 46. The chart that New Balance publishes that maps foot length to their last length for each model. The chart that shows circumference ranges for D, 2E, 4E. If a brand doesn't publish that data, you're guessing. And that's most brands.
The rise of direct-to-consumer brands has made this worse.
Much worse. Allbirds, Rothy's, a dozen others. There's no store, no Brannick device, no trying on. Their solution is generous return policies. Order 3 pairs, keep 1, send 2 back. The environmental cost of that's staggering. Returns generate millions of tons of carbon dioxide annually. The shipping, the repackaging, the pairs that can't be resold, and end up in a landfill or shredded.
And the return policy becomes a substitute for sizing accuracy.
It's cheaper for the brand to pay for returns than to invest in multiple last geometries for different foot shapes. They build one last, market it as universally comfortable, and let the logistics network absorb the cost of the mismatch. The customer thinks they're getting good service. They're actually subsidizing the brand's decision not to solve the fit problem.
What about Daniel specifically? He's got a wider foot. He wants durability and comfort. Is there a brand that actually serves that?
New Balance is the obvious one because of the width options and the published measurements. But also, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, some of the traditional work boot and heritage brands, Red Wing, Thorogood, Danner. They build on lasts that accommodate thicker socks and wider feet, and they offer multiple widths because their core customer is on concrete for 12 hours. The fit has to be right or the boot doesn't sell.
And those lasts tend to be roomier through the toe box.
They're built for foot function, not for the silhouette. A Red Wing Iron Ranger on their number 8 last has a completely different volume than a Nike Air Max. Daniel's foot might be swimming in one and crushed in the other, same labeled size.
The durability angle you mentioned earlier, wrong width, destroys shoes faster. Is that linear?
It's not linear, but it's consistent. The failure points are predictable. Narrow shoes on wide feet blow out the side stitching near the ball. The upper separates from the sole at the flex point because the foot is pressing outward while the shoe is flexing upward. Two different force vectors meeting at the same seam. The heel counter breaks down faster because the foot is jammed back into a cup that's too narrow, so the stiffener cracks. And the insole compresses unevenly. You get a divot under the ball that doesn't match your foot's actual pressure pattern.
So you're wearing through the shoe from the inside out.
And you can't see it happening. The shoe looks fine from the outside until the day the stitching gives way. Then it's trash.
The EU Paris point system. You said it's last length, not foot length. Does that mean a European 42 is always bigger than the equivalent US size?
Not always bigger, but the relationship isn't fixed. A Paris point is 2/3 of a centimeter. Size 42 means the last is 28 centimeters. But different brands add different amounts of ease. The space between the end of your foot and the end of the last. A dress shoe might add 10 millimeters of ease. A hiking boot might add 15. A running shoe might add a full centimeter and a half. So a 42 from one brand fits like a 43 from another, even within the same sizing system.
So even when Europe agrees on the unit, they don't agree on the application.
The unit is standardized. The interpretation isn't. It's the same problem as the US system, just with centimeters instead of barleycorns.
Australia using UK sizing with its own quirks. What's the quirk?
Australian women's sizing is typically US women's minus 2, but men's tends to follow UK directly. Except some Australian brands label their shoes with both US and UK sizes on the box, and the conversion isn't always consistent. And Australian width fittings sometimes use a different letter scale. It's a mess. Daniel's probably seen shoes labeled with 3 different size numbers and had no idea which one to trust.
The Brannick device instructions have one detail that surprised me. The arch length slider, the heel to ball measurement, is supposed to be the primary fit dimension. If your arch length measures a size 11, but your heel to toe is a 10, you buy the 11.
That's the official Brannick guidance. The arch length determines where the shoe flexes, and if the flex point doesn't match the ball of your foot, the shoe will never be comfortable regardless of how much toe room you have. Most people have never had their arch length measured. Most shoe store employees don't know the slider exists.
So Daniel's been fitted for length his whole life and probably has a long arch relative to his foot length, which means every pair of shoes he's ever bought flexes in the wrong place.
And he compensates by going wider or longer, neither of which fixes the flex point mismatch. He's solving the wrong problem.
The 3 measurements you described. If someone does those at home and then looks at a brand size chart, what are they actually looking for? Walk me through the matching process.
You take your heel to toe length in centimeters. Say it's 28 centimeters. You look at the brand size chart and find the size whose last length accommodates a 28 centimeter foot with appropriate ease. That might be a 43 in one brand, a 44 in another. Then you check your ball circumference against their width chart. If you're 10 3/8 inches around the ball, you need a 2E in New Balance, but maybe a 3E in a brand that runs narrower. Then you check the arch length. If your heel-to-ball measurement suggests a larger size than your heel-to-toe, you prioritize the arch length and size up, because the flex point alignment matters more than a little extra toe room.
And if the brand doesn't publish any of this?
Then you're back to ordering 3 pairs and returning 2, or you find a brand that does publish it. The information asymmetry is the problem. The brand knows exactly what last geometry they're using. They're choosing not to share it.
Which brings us back to the direct-to-consumer environmental cost. The returns aren't just a convenience. They're a structural consequence of withheld information.
The brand could publish a simple diagram of their last length, ball width, heel width, instep height. That's four numbers. It'd cost them nothing. But they don't, because if you knew the last dimensions, you'd realize their size 10 is actually a 9.5 with a narrow heel, and you'd buy from someone else.
What about the actual materials for durability? Daniel mentioned comfort and durability together. Is there a material sweet spot for wide feet?
Full-grain leather uppers are more forgiving than synthetic mesh or knit uppers because leather stretches and molds to your foot over time. A wide foot in a leather shoe will create its own custom fit after about 20 to 30 hours of wear. Synthetics don't do that. They hold their shape, which means if the shape is wrong, it stays wrong. For the sole, a Goodyear welt or stitch-down construction means the shoe can be resoled, so the upper can last for a decade or more if it's properly fitted.
But most athletic shoes are cemented construction. The sole is glued on, can't be replaced.
And that's fine for a running shoe that's designed for 300 to 500 miles. But for everyday footwear, the durability equation changes completely if the shoe fits. A well-fitted leather shoe with a replaceable sole is a 10-year purchase. A poorly fitted sneaker is an 18-month purchase. The cost per wear flips dramatically.
So the width measurement isn't just about comfort. It's the variable that determines whether you're buying a disposable product or a durable good.
Nobody sells shoes that way because the durable good model makes less money than the disposable model. The industry wants you to replace your shoes every year. Proper fit undermines that.
The half size for width trap you mentioned. Why does that advice persist? Every shoe salesperson has said it.
Because it's easy to say, and it sort of works for people who are barely wide. If you're a D width trying to fit into a C, going up a half size gives you a tiny bit more volume through the midfoot. Not width, but volume. And it might be enough. But for someone like Daniel, who's a genuine wide 2E or wider, the half size trick does nothing except make the shoe too long. The volume increase is in the wrong dimension.
Volume versus width. That's a distinction most people don't make.
A shoe is a three-dimensional cavity. Width is one axis. Volume is the whole thing. Width, height, instep clearance, toe box depth. Two shoes with the same ball width can have completely different volumes because one has a taller toe box or a higher instep. That's why two different brands 12 wide fit differently even if they both claim two. The width measurement is at the ball. The rest of the shoe is whatever the last designer decided.
Which means Daniel's quest for a durable, comfortable shoe is really a quest for a last that matches his foot's particular three-dimensional shape.
The only way to find it's to know your measurements and find a brand that publishes theirs. Or get very lucky in a store with a knowledgeable salesperson and a branding device they actually know how to use.
Which is what? 1 in 50 shoe stores at this point.
If that. Most places have a Brannock device sitting in the corner gathering dust. The employee hands you the shoe and says, walk around, see how it feels. Feel isn't a measurement.
1993. Florsheim store in the Manchester Mall. We had a Brannock and a metal foot measuring stick with a sliding width bar. The manager, a man named Gus, could look at someone's foot from across the room and pull the right size and width off the shelf. He was wrong maybe once a month. You're all overcomplicating this. The Brannock device has that metal arch-length slider. Nobody uses it. Nobody even knows what it's for. The arch-length, heel-to-ball, is more important than total length for how the shoe actually fits. If your arch is long relative to your foot, you need a different last shape. Daniel probably has a long arch. That's why he can never remember his size. His foot doesn't fit standard lasts, and the size number keeps changing because he's trying to solve an arch-length problem with a length number.
Is that actually true? Or is this Florsheim nostalgia?
I fitted 40-year-old men who had been wearing the wrong size for decades. Arch length was the tell every time. Guy comes in convinced he's a 10.5. Brannock says his heel to toe is a 10, but the arch slider says 11. You put him in an 11. He argues with you. Then he walks around the store for 2 minutes and buys two pairs. The arch length determines where the shoe bends. If the bend is behind the ball of your foot, the shoe is fighting you with every step. Your foot is trying to flex at the ball, the shoe is flexing further back, and the upper is buckling in the wrong place. That's the discomfort people blame on width, or length, or brand quality. It's almost always arch length.
The Brannock instructions actually confirm this. They say to fit to the larger of the two measurements, heel to toe or arch length. If your arch measures a size larger, you buy that size.
Nobody does. Because the arch slider is the third thing on the device, and the customer is already bored by the time you get to it.
Daniel's entire footwear history might be a series of shoes that bend in the wrong place.
Almost certainly. Wide feet and a long arch. That combination means he's been buying shoes that are too short in the arch and too narrow in the ball, and compensating by going up in length, which makes the arch mismatch worse because now the flex point is even further back relative to his foot. Gus used to say you can read a foot like a palm. The callus pattern tells you everything. Callus under the ball means the shoe is flexing too far forward. Callus on the outside edge means you're supinating because the shoe is too narrow and you're rolling to the outside to find space. Callus on the heel means the heel counter is too loose and your foot is sliding.
That's a clinical observation. Podiatrists look at callus patterns the same way.
It's not complicated. You just have to look.
If arch length is the secret variable, why don't more brands design for it?
Cost. A last that accommodates a long arch relative to foot length is a different shape. It has a longer vamp, more volume through the midfoot, a different flex point geometry. That's a separate last. Most brands build one last per size and call it universal. Building multiple arch length variants would double or triple the last library.
Florsheim in the 90s had three different last shapes for the same size. Regular, long arch, and combination last for wide forefoot with narrow heel. That was one mid-range shoe brand in one mall in Connecticut. If they could do it, the big brands could do it. They choose not to.
Three last variants per size. That's a manufacturing commitment.
It's a manufacturing decision. The math hasn't changed. The molds cost the same to cut now as they did then, adjusted for inflation. The difference is that Florsheim sold shoes to men who wore them for 10 years and came back for a rezzo. The business model supported the fit investment.
The 3D scanning technology exists now. Some direct-to-consumer brands already use it. You scan your feet with your phone camera, it builds a 3D model, and the algorithm matches you to a size. But the matching is only as good as the last data the brand feeds into it, and that data is still proprietary. The scan is precise. The recommendation is still a guess.
The technology to solve this exists. The willingness to share the last geometry doesn't.
The scan companies want to be the platform. They want every brand's last data in one database so the scan matches your foot to the actual shoe that fits. The brands don't want that because then you'd buy the shoe that fits instead of the shoe they marketed to you.
That's the structural tension. Sizing accuracy and brand loyalty are in conflict. If the best-fitting shoe for Daniel's foot is a New Balance 624 and 12-2E, and the scan tells him that, he buys that shoe forever. He never tries another brand. Every other brand loses him.
The chaos is profitable.
The chaos is a feature. It keeps you trying new brands, returning shoes, walking into stores, browsing. Every wrong purchase is a data point the brand collects. Every return is a chance to retarget you with a different model. The friction is the business model.
I still have the metal footstick from that Florsheim. Gus gave it to me when the store closed in 98. It's in a box somewhere. Measures length, width, and arch length in one motion. 3 seconds, no batteries.
That's a fascinating claim, and one we don't have time to fully unpack today. But it points to something bigger. If arch length is as important as Hilbert says, and the Brannock device has been measuring it since 1925, the information has been available for a century. We've just chosen not to use it.
The 3D scanning companies are rediscovering what a shoe salesman in a Connecticut mall knew in 1993. The technology changes. The foot doesn't.
This has been My Weird Prompts. With thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop, who apparently has a metal foot measuring stick in a box and a lot of opinions about arch length.
If you enjoyed this episode, measure your arch length and tell us what you find. We're at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep, The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.